Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Truckers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
We're in the second hour now. It is April the 3rd in the year of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, 2021. Like we always say, there's no other name under the sun which man can be saved other than Jesus Christ. You know, as you well know, tomorrow, Sunday, is Easter Sunday, and I hope all of you have a blessed Holy Sunday. You know, we were talking about, before we went to the break, we were talking about different religions and, you know, the Jews. Here, I heard this, there was this one, and this rabbi in the book by Ernst Zundel, this says, Setting the Record Straight, Letters from Cell Number 7. I've tried to find it during the break, but there's a quote in there from a Jewish rabbi. He says that the Holocaust is not a Jewish religion. He said it's a religion par excellence for the goyim. And people, in just a minute, we're going to play a quick audio before we go back to our guest. I see, you know, I might be kind of weird, but I see patterns and I see relationships in different events, how they hook together. So we're going to play a quick vote. Cameron's going to play a quick clip about the BLM that ties in, I think, really well for what we're talking about, because it is the BLM, in my opinion, is the greatest lie, one of the greatest lies going on right now. So go ahead, Cameron, play that clip if you don't mind.
The debate topic is, where is America going on racism and BLM? And what should we be doing next? And we're going to begin with Gay Town Hall and Taisha.
As someone who sits on this panel freely and with consent representing the black populace, as a black person, I find it really hard to have conversations and see these opinions from people who do not look like me and don't share that lens and that reality of that fear walking out the house and being troubled when I see a police officer down the street knowing that I could be racially profiled at any moment.
We're going to move to Walkaway. Who's going to begin for 2 minutes?
I will go.
Okay.
So I just want to start by saying that I may not look like you, Taisha, but I'm just going to give you some numbers, and numbers have no color. They don't lie. So why don't we start with the fact that there are 328 million people in America. There are 41.4 million black people in America, which is 12.6% of the population. Yet 12.6% of the population is committing more than 50% of violent crime in this country. 9 unarmed black men were killed by police in 2019. 9 unarmed. Now, unarmed doesn't mean innocent. Unarmed doesn't mean not a threat. So last year, 0.000022% of the black population was an unarmed black person killed by the police. That is why we are burning America to the ground. That is why we are creating this false narrative of black people being attacked by police based off of 0.000022% of the black population. This represents 0.1% of all black homicides in the entire year of 2019. A police officer is 18.5 times more likely to be killed by a black man than a black man is to be killed by a police officer. The number of unarmed black Americans killed by police is down 23% since 2015 when Barack Obama was the president. And 93% of black homicides are committed by other black Americans. So if you truly care about black lives, I suggest you get to Chicago, because every weekend dozens of black people are being killed by other black people. The Black Lives Matter movement is the greatest lie ever told, ever believed, and we are burning our country down for no reason whatsoever.
I think that fellow said it great. I really do. I had his name here a minute ago. I don't see it now, but I guess it doesn't matter that much. His name was Brand Strata. His last name is Straka. The man was really eloquent, and he slaughtered that black woman. Man, what he made, he showed her up to be the fool that she is. But people, the reason I brought that up, that's one other lie. We have the lie we talked about the United States ship Liberty that's been suppressed. We have the lie of the Holocaust that's been just advertised with everything but the Goodyear blimp. And we have this new modern lie, Black Lives Matter, which, as the man said, it's just based on the greatest devil's lie around. Now, with that, Mr. Fred, I hope I didn't mutter up the creek too much, but I saw that. That's, to me, that's a pattern. It's a that the BLM is one member of the set, just like the United States ship Liberty is a member of a set of this of the set of all lies being that's been perpetrated for years and years and years against the American people, against all white people of the world. So with that, Mr. Fred, go ahead and continue on where you were before we went to the break.
Well, I think it was Jurgen that was speaking, so let him continue.
Oh, okay. This, I think you're right.
Yes, we just finished talking about going to Auschwitz. That's right. The Auschwitz Hotel and all that. Yes, so anyway, we did our job there. Actually, Fred's, was he a draftsman that he came along? Right? His name was Miller as well, I believe.
Howard Miller, yes.
Yeah, Miller. So, so we did our whole job there. Finally got it done before we got overwhelmed by tourists and things again. And then,
we went. I found it actually quite amusing to listen to the video where you were talking about, and also our last show together. You talked about how first you had to change direction right from day one. That it was just way too busy at Auschwitz, so you went to another camp first. I think Majdanek. I'm not sure, but you know, and just to regroup and do a new strategy. I think it was great how you guys did this. Just kind of, you had to do it surreptitiously, and people might be critical of that. But hey, the Auschwitz staff, all of the staff, they were avowed exterminationists. I mean, they were all on the side of the exterminationists. So of course, they're not going to just allow openly for this. You know, investigation to take place in which you're actually taking samples from the walls, samples from the concrete, the floor, the walls. I mean, you had to do it secretly, but you had this team along to document it very thoroughly so that nobody could accuse you of saying, oh, no, you got that sample elsewhere. It's very, very documented, isn't it? I mean, I guess, Fred, you would have been really, you know, have coordinated the make sure that everything is very precise and documented, yes?
Well, yes, and we also had to make sure that that we didn't want somebody complaining that we were doing it. I'm in there with a hammer and a chisel and a star drill, and I'm chipping away at their greatest monument to the Holocaust here, and we had people stationed at the doors, and when anybody came and looked like they were coming into the building, somebody would hold up, Fred, and then Fred would hold up. He'd put the tools in his pocket, and they'd just be standing there whistling when they come in, and as soon as they left, we'd start chiseling away again. And we had to be careful because somebody would have seen us. You can be sure some Jew would have seen it and would have gone out to somebody's chiseling pieces of the wall off in there. But
And you know, just in case somebody in, you know, is listening and thinking, well, gee, they're you know, doing something that they shouldn't have been doing. Well, if one should think of it this way, the fact that nobody's allowed to officially have an investigation and it runs right through to today where, for example, in a German court of law, evidence is illegal, you know, unless it's some, they're fictitious stories, they're fictitious evidence, but the actual real evidence, forensic evidence, architectural evidence, documentary evidence is illegal. So really, it's stacked in favor of this story, the false story, their religion, the Holocaustianity religion. So that's why people like you and your team, Jurgen, and had to do it this way and, you know, surreptitiously get these samples. But there you go. That's the real evidence. There's the evidence.
Well, you know,
go ahead.
Following year, we did almost get in trouble because we were at Dachau. And Dachau was the show place. Dachau has a real spiffy looking gas chamber. That was the one that was built. It was the second one that was built there by Eisenhower. It was the show place. It's got ceramic tile. Looks like a hospital. But at any rate, when we were there, we had Mark Weber and Robert Forreston were in our party, and they had these ladies who were the guides that were taking tour groups through. And I'm doing things I'm
Fred?
Not supposed to be doing. Yes.
Excuse me, Fred. Maybe you could explain a little about who Robert Forreston and Mark Weber were. Who are they?
Yeah, Mark Weber, of course, is he's the director of the Institute of Historical Review, and unfortunately, he's no longer a revisionist. And of course, Robert Forreston was probably one of our greatest revisionists. He certainly suffered very bad. He was beaten to near within an inch of his life three or four times by the JDL, the Jewish Defense League. And he was the one that actually went to Ernst and said, we got to get somebody in here that knows what they're doing. And he was the one that actually, because I came in, we broke the back of the lie because we finally had proof. But at any rate, they had these lady guides that were taking tour groups through, and they were spouting off and telling lies. I don't think they knew they were telling lies, but Forreston and Weber took exception, and they got into a pitched argument in front of two groups of tourists that were coming through. Well,
we have to go to a quick break. We got to go to a commercial break. Don't lose that thought. People, hold on your seats. We'll be right back. Listen to Blood River Radio, and we are with Fred Lutcher, Jürgen Newman, and Monica Schaefer. We'll be right back.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death. Like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at bloodriverradio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
Dear Blood River Radio people, dear family, we're right back. We're in the second segment of the second hour. We're getting ready to go right back to our great guests. And I'd like to ask them, Fred, Jürgen, and Monica. Before we forget, I want to ask y'all, I'd like to, if we have time, I'd like to talk about some of these people that you talked about, Robert Forreston. I was thinking David Irvin, a few other Holocaust so-called revisionists, and for the price they paid, you know, the people that came before me, if we have time, just pick a couple of your favorites and the price they paid, for instance, dying in prison, et cetera, et cetera. And you say, we're going right back to, I keep forgetting, back to Jurgen, when you're speaking for the break.
A really good story.
Great.
Fred was telling a really good story there about Robert Poisson getting into an argument with the tourists.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
That's right. Go ahead.
Yeah, Follison and Weber took exception to something that these guides were saying. And, of course, they're trained and they read from a script like most guides do on any kind of a tour. And they were saying things that were totally incorrect. I'm sure they believed them, but that wasn't the issue. And they almost got into a knockdown fight. That's how noisy and loud it got. And at any rate, I was there doing things I shouldn't have been doing, and I was with my ex-wife and her son. They had come with us, and I saw what was brewing. So I told Leb, I said, let's get out of here. We took off, got out to the car, and we left. And while we were doing that, one of the tour guides called security. Everybody there was detained. They took the cameras, they took the video cameras and the steel cameras away from the cameramen that had been sent with us. They detained Forrest and they detained Weber. And then finally, afterward, they figured out that there was nothing that anybody was really doing except a disagreement. They finally let everybody go. But I got out of there because I didn't want them to find out I was there. That's all they would have needed, plus the fact I was going places I shouldn't have been going, and I was taking samples from places where I shouldn't have been taking them. So at any rate, we got out, and they were all released later, but as we had just left and we got down the road somewhere, and they locked down Dachau. They wouldn't let anybody else out until they sorted out what happened. So that was not a good place to be at that time, and... I told Robert.
I would like to ask if that video, like, Jurgen, did you film that? And if so, is this video available on your channel? And if so, you could tell people, well, actually, you could tell people about your channel anyway, if they want to see some really interesting videos. So did you film that? And because I've seen something like this, it might have been a different time and a different place, but it does ring a bell for Robert Follison getting into a debate with a tour group. Go ahead, Jurgen.
Yes, I was there doing the camera work again, and it was very, very interesting to see them doing their debate. Follison doing his debate with the tour guide, with the tourists. It was very different. Because the ones I remember were two specific debates that he had. One was with a group of tourists, young Germans, who were there, you know, being propagandized with this whole story, right? And so Forsan got into it with the young guys. And the young guy, didn't matter what you wanted to say, he always had an answer, right? He just didn't want to give up his belief in the Holocaust, you know. So it was a back and forth and a back and forth and a back and forth. And eventually they agreed to disagree. But the other group was a complete different contrast.
That?
Pardon me?
Did you film that? And is it still available?
Yes.
That I think people would love to see that. Tell them where they can find that, please.
Yeah. Okay, I will in a minute. But then a second group came along. And here's the difference. The second group were American tourists. And they were more than happy to stand there and listen to what Forrest had to say. Right? They asked him some good questions, et cetera, et cetera. And when they left, they were thinking. So there's a difference between the brainwashed Germans of today and the free-thinking of Americans of today.
That is a fantastic story, really, because, you know, I just say that the central... I guess ground zero for indoctrination and this quote-unquote re-education after the war was on the German people. They had to The Jews had to make that ground zero for their re-education program, and the Germans have been so brought down to their knees, which is, of course, what Ernst Sundel he chose the perfect title for his documentary, Off Your Knees, Germany, exclamation mark, and I encourage people to look that up, too. It's a 90-minute documentary, and it'll tell, the story of what happened with Ernst Sundel's trials and his the persecution of him and the firebombing of his home and all kinds of things. So, yeah, that is just incredible. I wanted to tie this together to... Sorry, go ahead.
Another good title was one of the, probably the second or third videos that we ever made, Ernst and myself, it was 1982. It was called, we titled it Genocide by Propaganda, talking about the Germans, right? How we are being genocided by propaganda, right? Where, we are nowadays white people and the rest of it, we are all accepting our own genocide, generally speaking, because of the propaganda that we're being fed, the brainwashing that we're undergoing, etc. So we were already into those kind of thoughts back in 82 when we were doing those things. And if you want to see these videos of which we are speaking, you can go to my channel on BitChute, and the channel name is John Robinson 101, all one word. And the name of the video, the documentary that has the debates with the Forest on and the group of tourists and things, is called The Second Leuchter Report. The first Leuchter Report, of course, being our trip to Poland, the second one being the trip to Germany.
Yes.
Yeah, Jordan, I'd like to chip in here just for one second. I'd like to point out, you brought up an excellent point. We're being genocided by propaganda, and that's one of the reasons I had Cam to play that audio a minute ago, because, about the debate with the Black Lives Matter women, the majority of the people in the BLM happen to be young white people, and they hate themselves. That's one. You made that segue perfectly for me, Jürgen. But I hope I didn't interrupt you. Go back, Miss Monica. I think you were saying something.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to bring that up. That you're playing that clip about the Black Lives Matter. What came to my mind is this guilt cult. That is what it is, and this re-education of the German people primarily, and then by extension all white people, we've all been quote-unquote re-educated, propagandized, lied to, deceived, just all those words apply. And it's the guilt cult that, we are responsible for everything bad that's ever happened on this earth, and if we speak up about any of the current policies, then, that's going to lead to the next Holocaust, So this Holocaust lie is pivotal to the guilt cult, which has led directly to this Black Lives Matter and BLM. I call it burn, loot, and murder, really. So that ties together. Yes. Yeah, it's, all the dots can be connected. Go ahead.
Very good.
I would like to make one comment here that these people that got into the argument with Forreston, there was no contest. It's like somebody going into a battle of wits with a half-wit, because nobody was going to get by Forreston. I mean, Forreston not only was one of the greatest experts on this, but he also was, as Jürgen said, he was a pit bull. He wouldn't let go. And these people were supposedly trained for this, but they weren't going to get anywhere because they were dealing with one of the top experts in the world. And, the people listening had to appreciate that because, Forreston had an answer for everything. So
what's really interesting about Robert Forreston is what he said about his early years when he was a teenager. Back during World War II, he lived in Vichy, France, right?
Yes.
The part of France that was still not occupied by the Germans after the war, and were pro-German.
Jürgen, we're going to a break. Hold that thought. We'll be right back right after this break. So hold that thought. Hold on, people. We'll be right back.
Yeah. protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Almost 1.6 million travelers moved through TSA checkpoints on Friday. On Friday, CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky spoke about new coronavirus travel guidelines.
Fully vaccinated grandparents can fly to visit their healthy grandkids without getting a COVID-19 test or self-quarantining, provided they follow the other recommended prevention measures while traveling.
She said domestic travel is safe for people who are 2 weeks past their final vaccine dose, but non-essential travel is still not recommended because of the lingering high cases. Former CDC Director Dr. Thomas Frieden tells ABC,
you have to continue to mask up, and you don't want to have a family traveling with some people vaccinated, some people unvaccinated, and going on travel, because we know that we're heading into the fourth surge.
This is USA Radio News.
Maybe you've heard about MediShare and you know what it is. It's the affordable alternative to health insurance. But you've wondered, can I really save a significant amount of money on my monthly health care bills? And the answer is an emphatic yes, you can. You could save a lot of money. Whether it's just for you or for an entire family, MediShare has an option for you. In fact, the typical family saves $500 a month switching to MediShare. And it really is the gold standard when it comes to healthcare sharing. You get free telehealth services. You get a huge network of doctors. You get great customer support. And you get the sense of security that comes from being a part of 400,000 people who share not just each other's medical bills, but purpose too. MediShare is a community of Christians who pull together and pray for each other, which is very refreshing right now. If you want more info, it's so simple. You can get a price within 2 minutes. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
A man accused of opening fire at a Southern California business complex, killing 4 people, including a child, and injuring 3 others, has now been charged with 4 counts of murder and could face the death penalty, according to prosecutors. The Orange County District Attorney's Office says Aminadab Gonzalez faces 4 felony counts of murder and 1 felony count of attempted murder. Also, 2 felony counts of attempted murder of a police officer. Orange police said Gonzalez knew the victims, locked the gates to the business complex before opening fire inside a business, which was called Unified Homes. The police fired on him through the gates and subdued him before using bolt cutters to break the bike locks and access the scene. It's back to the drawing board on Iran's nuclear program. The State Department is announcing that talks will resume, but they say the U.S. and Iran won't talk directly at this point. They're scheduled to be held on Tuesday in Vienna, Austria. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Well, people, thank you for holding on. We're going into the next segment here in Blood River Radio. In case you're just tuning in, we have Fred Butcher, Jurgen Newman, and Monica Chaperone. I'll just make a quick comment. We're talking about this big Holocaust lie and the white guilt. And Ernst Sundell writing one of his premier books, probably called Off Your Knees, Germany. In another book, Genocide by Propaganda. I think that Genocide by Propaganda would also tune in. It'd be really, really relevant today, real timely. You see veterans sleeping under bridges, for no place to eat or no place to stay. You see old people that have worked all their lives. I've heard some stories of people, have lost their retirements, even eating dog food. These are old white people that can barely afford to get along. They can't afford health insurance. Run out of medicine. They try to skimp on their medicine. And meanwhile, folks, we have thousands and thousands of hordes of these colored, these mud people coming across the borders into the United States, and they're putting them up in luxury hotels. They're actually buying, the government's actually buying bus tickets and even plane tickets, having these people flown around to different cities all over the United States. And meanwhile, you have the stupid National Guard. I don't know why anybody would be so stupid to go back to the National Guard. I'm telling, this coming from somebody who has, I have two honorable discharges from the United States Army, so I can say it. I was drafted to get the first one, but and I was in the National Guard one time, but you have to be stupid to stay in the National Guard, to sleep on the ground and eat poison food, and, you know, and guarding these satanic people, these pedophiles in Washington, D.C., while we got thousands and probably millions of people coming across into the United States and being treated like royalty. And they're even be giving stimulus checks. And then if you mention that to some of these young eggheads downtown here in Memphis, Tennessee, they'll say you're a hate monger. And that's what that stuff, thinking like that leads to, could lead to another Holocaust. Go ahead back on, Jürgen. I hope I didn't take up too much of the time. Go ahead, fella.
Yes, I was talking about Professor Forreston, and he was talking about his teenage years, and he was a citizen of Vichy France, which is supposedly this fascist state that was pro-Nazis and authoritarian and dictatorship and all that. So at that time, he believed all kinds of anti-German propaganda, and he really disliked them, and therefore he really hated the president of Vichy France, whose name was Laval. And so he was really upset one day, and in his school class, he took out his pocket knife and he carved into the wooden top of his desk, "Death to Laval." So he said, "You know, I got into really big trouble over that." He said, "But nowhere near the trouble that I've had since I've been exposing the Holocaust." So that's the difference between a so-called authoritarian state and a so-called democratic state. And, you know, there you have it. I mean, after all, you have, you know, the old Jewish phrase that we should never forgive and never forget.
Exactly.
Well, there's the quote by Elie Wiesel, I think it was, who said that every Jew should reserve a corner of their heart for pure hatred of the German people, something like that. Maybe one of you can say it better, but you're basically telling them, yes, make sure you reserve a part of your energy basically to hate the German people. You know, everything is reversed. They call us haters when we expose their lies. I just say truth is hate to those who hate the truth, and that is how it is. You know, Jürgen, you once mentioned to me in a telephone call that your father was quite concerned about you becoming too Canadian, losing your German-ness. And maybe just tell us, how did Ernst Sundel, I think he had quite an impact on you and perhaps made you, you know, gave you an appreciation of who your ancestors were and, you know, gave you pride again in who you are, who your ancestors are. Do you want to make a comment about that?
Sure. When I was growing up in Canada, my parents had a very small influence on me because they were working reasonably low-paying jobs, and so they had to work a lot of hours in order to make things meet. After all, we had five children and so on. And so, therefore, I was getting all my influence from the media and, of course, from the so-called education system and so on. So I was becoming what my father saw as becoming a Canadian. I remember quite distinctly one day when he asked him to do something, and I just said, "Oh, man, I don't have to listen to you." That was the attitude I was getting. And that's what he was really shocked with. And so when we finally met Ernst and went there, he talked to Ernst about that. And he said, "Oh, my son, Ernst tells me, he said, "Oh, I'm afraid my son's becoming a Canadian. Could you help me, you know?" And so Ernst said, "Well, I'll see what I can do." So over the time when I was there, of course, it was a good start in learning historical facts. I was really into that when I saw that. That was really good, but that wasn't the only thing that turned me around. a lot of what turned me around was Ernst as a personal role model. I had never personally met a man who was as honest as he was, dealing with everybody. Didn't matter whether it was friend or enemy, whatever was right was done. And that's how I started seeing that. I thought, you know, that really speaks to me, the concept of being honest, etc. And the other one was Ernst's courage. You know, he taught me a lot about courage by his example. And the two examples that come to mind offhand, well, the first one is obvious, I think, in that in all his videos, in all his audio tapes, everything that he published, he always published his home phone and home address. How many other people in the struggle do that? Right? Usually you have, some sort of a P.O. box and all this other kind of stuff. And he had to defend his house many, many times. He had, a couple of bomb attacks, the fire. He had people round the clock hate calls on the phone and postmen stealing his mail, stealing his money. And he had to go through all this for years and years. But he showed the courage. He stuck with it. And he kept doing it. And then one night, one particular one was, I parked my car basically across the street from his house. And the JDL was out protesting and demonstrating in front of his house. And later on in the evening, there was about four of them left. It was about midnight. And I had to get the car moved because otherwise, I took the possibility I'm going to get towed away. So we thought, what can we do about this? So a friend of mine, we decided that myself and one of the other men would go out the back door and go around the side up to the main street. In the meantime, Ernst would go out front and he would draw attention from the JDL and keep them busy while we walked across the street and drove away. And so as I'm walking across there, I'm watching him and he's standing there. He walks right up to them with his little maybe waist-high fence in between them. And they're just going at it, talking. And he can see me. I'm sure the whole idea was once he can see me get into the car, he should go back inside so he doesn't get in danger. But he didn't do that. He still stood there, and they still argued back and forth, and he even started a little pushing. And by the time I had parked the car and came back again, he was inside the house, and it was all over. But the courage for him to do that, to me, that really spoke to me. I thought, now here is a real man. So, yes, he's a role model to the whole thing.
Yeah,
always a
you know, just to go back, beautiful. It's a very, very, very important story. And that's why the Jews really hated Ernst Sundel so much, because they couldn't smear him with anything other than just, you know, their shenanigans, you know. They use violence and force and firebombs and whatnot, but they couldn't smear him with actual, you know, that he's a bad guy or something. But, you know, you did tell me a story once. You know, when you talk about becoming a Canadian, of course, that's to do with the propaganda and the lies. And so the films and the movies, and you told me once about watching television and then cheering on when one of these shows, there's so many shows about the war, or, and a German got shot and you were cheering, and that your dad did not take kindly to that.
Michael, we get ready for a quick break. Just hold that thought. We'll be right back after this break, folks. Hang on to your seat. We're going to our last segment, unfortunately. Be right back.
Attorney Jason Robb, General Counsel of the Knights Party, based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important, It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, "If those people," referring to the dictatorial federal government, "if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home." As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
Well, Blood River Radio family, this is the last segment of our, I guess you call it our Easter show. We've had experts, world-renowned experts, Fred Luecher, Jürgen Neumann. I mean, they are Mr. Holocaust experts. And Monica Schaefer has been studying this all of her life. She paid the price. You know, she did a stint in the German prison because for making a little dinky video just in, you know, saying she was wrong about the Holocaust. So, you know, I guess if you're telling the, I guess they put her in jail for lying or maybe telling the truth. But one last tidbit before I go back to our guest, you know, I'd just like to point this out, all the Trump lovers out there. You know, before he left office, Trump, President Donald Trump, and his former CIA head, Mike Pompeo, and he was also at one time was a head of the State Department, I believe. But I know he ran the CIA. They together, those two guys, they merged the United States intelligence apparatus with that of Israel. So what you got? You have the Mossad agents in there. You know, they no longer have to. They no longer had to get caught, worry about spying, getting paying attention to spying, because I happen to think, you know, Jonathan Pollard comes to mind. Jonathan Pollard, the most dangerous, the most damaging spy in the history of the United States, caused God only knows how many American agents to be killed because he ratted them out. President Trump got him on a plane, Sheldon Adelson's private plane. The ultra billionaire Sheldon Adelson flew him on his private jet. The Jonathan Pollard. And when Pollard got to Israel, he got on the ground, he kissed it, and Benjamin Netanyahu welcomed him. The Israeli government welcomed that dude as a national hero. And this guy, you know, Pollard was supposedly an American citizen. And I'll make this quick. He said, here's what he said. He said that every Jew in America, he said, they owe allegiance to Israel and they should be willing to spy on the United States at the behest of Israel. And now with that, I just thought I'd throw that tidbit out there, guys. So continue on, guys.
Jürgen, that was a really powerful statement that you made about Ernst Zundel's character, his integrity, his honesty. And, you know, it's like the more honest and, you know, the greater the integrity and the better, basically, somebody is, the more that is hated by the Jews, especially if that person is awake to their program and is not afraid to face them and not afraid to talk about it. And yeah, so it's every in our upside down world where, you know, the inverted world where the truth is all inverted. That's the Jewish world, really. And it's not a surprise that they would honor and love their spies and traitors like Pollard that you just talked about, Eddie. I think we should bring it back. Perhaps, Fred, you have some comments about just how this whole adventure with becoming an expert for these gas chambers, the non-existent homicidal gas chambers, how that changed your life. And then, you know, we can maybe you have some final thoughts about that, and then we'll bring it back to Jürgen. Hopefully we'll be able to all have some final thoughts on this. Go ahead, Fred.
Well, there's one thing I'd like to comment on before that, because we talked about, and it was suggested we talk about David Irving and Mark Weber. And
yes.
Both of
yes.
them, they were very important revisionists at one point. And at this point, neither one of them are revisionists. Because in order to be a revisionist, you have to know and you have to understand and you have to believe that there were no gas chambers ever in Poland or in any place in Europe for executing Jews or other people during World War II. The only gas chambers that existed were in the United States, and they were for killing one or two people at a time. There were no mass executions. But what's happened is, and, you know, I don't propose to condemn any of either one of Mark Weber or David Irving, but both of them now say that although there were no gas chambers at Auschwitz and Birkenau and Majdanek, there were gas chambers and there were limited gassings at the transit camps. And because of this, they now no longer are revisionists. A revisionist has to know, and a revisionist has to embrace my report. And the point is, it is impossible, as indicated in my report, to mass execute people. We don't have enough gas. We don't have enough capability to do that with any more than two or maybe three people. And our gas chambers never had any more than two. Most of them were one here in the United States. So, I mean, the point is that unless you accept the fact that it's impossible to do mass executions with hydrogen cyanide gas or with carbon monoxide gas or with carbon dioxide or with any type of gas at all, then you're no longer a revisionist. You belong in the group of exterminationists. Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment just about that word, and this is just kind of my pet peeve, because I know exactly what you're talking about when you say revisionist, is those who have looked at what we've been taught about the history of the Holocaust in particular, and they are revising it now to tell the truth about it. Now, when the first time that I heard that word, I had real problem with that, because I find it confusing, because they are the ones who actually revised what happened to tell lies, and we're bringing it back to the truth. But I know that's just my thing, but I find it a confusing word, and I know that, you know, Robert Folisol and all the people who have done such wonderful work, they call themselves revisionists. I just wanted to throw that out there, though, because I find the word problematic. So I try to qualify it when I talk about it. Go ahead, Fred, your thing.
Yeah, the strict definition of revisionist has got nothing to do with the Holocaust. It's a person who is reviewing history and changing things. And we've had this before in history. Revisionists came after the French Revolution, and Napoleon had been painted with a very vile paint, and he had been made look terrible. And actually, he was a good man for France, and he was good for the country. He stopped the murder of thousands of Frenchmen on the guillotine. And revisionists later reformed him and said he wasn't anything like. And it's again the British propaganda, because they were the ones that were fighting him. They made him look like the devil, and he wasn't. The same thing happened again in the United States after the Civil War, and it wasn't until 1901, 1908, 1910 that they started to change the history books, and they started to talk about the fact that the carpetbaggers went down south and they were Jews, and they looted the South. And what they did is they caused a lot of problems in the South. They took people's property away over the tax issue. They made the taxes so high that the people that owned the property couldn't pay them, and then they used the military to enforce the law, and Congress even had to pass a law, which was called the Posse Comitatus Law, which prevented the use of the military for the enforcement of civil law. So, I mean, these were two places where there were revisionists. Now, the interesting thing is that a great deal of the French Revolution was controlled by the Jews.
And that was basically their first, yeah, I agree. That was where they really got going with all these revolutions.
Right. So
the French Revolution, then the Russian Revolution, right. That was Jewish. It was not the Russians who stood up. It was the Jews who hated the Russians, and that was the Bolsheviks.
Right. So now revisionists are, we're changing the history books relative to what happened during World War II. A Holocaust revisionist, we're just putting a one portion of history under the microscope, and we're redefining it and proving what did and what didn't happen. But the interesting thing was the Jews were involved again. We had the Jews in France, we had the Jews during the American Civil War, and now we have the Jews with another lie in Poland. So, I mean,
Fred, I'd like to interject. Fred, I'd like to make a quick point here. I'd like to remind people that Fred Leutcher is an engineer. Fred Leutcher is certified in Canada, in the United States, in parts of Germany, as an expert on lethal injection, electric chairs, and gas chambers. With all due respect, Mark Weber and David Irving are none of those above. Continue on, Fred.
They're both very good historians, and I don't criticize them, and I don't condemn them for what's happened. I don't criticize them for what's happened because a lot of things happened to David Irving, and I have never walked in his shoes, and I'm not going to say anything bad about him. He's an excellent historian. I don't agree with him with him changing his position, but unfortunately he has, and the same Mark Weber may have reasons for what he's done, but they're not my reasons. And they, because they've changed their view, it doesn't mean that they can they don't belong in our group of revisionists. A revisionist relative to the Holocaust means that every revisionist has to believe that mass executions are impossible with gas. That's the core of everything when you look right down at what's happened. And all of the other revisionists have proved it looking at the historical facts. I proved it with scientific evidence and engineering evidence. But
That's the point.
I wouldn't condemn Mark Weber, and I wouldn't condemn David Irving, because I haven't walked in their shoes, and I don't know what these people have gone through. All I can state is what I've gone through, and the fact that I've been prodded by the Jews, I've been attacked by the Jews, I've been firebombed by the Jews, it's just given me greater resolve to fight them, because I know that they have to be fought.
Yeah, interestingly, I mean, Eddie, you had earlier wanted to know, yeah, what happens to people when they do this and if they're out in the public eye, and many people who butt their heads against this sacrosanct Holocaust story, they do end up in prison. My brother, case in point, he's still in prison. I was in prison, and many others. You know, there's a guy in Austria who was in prison for 15 years because he refuses to, you know, soften his story. So that alone should tell people there's a problem with this story.
Absolutely.
But, yes,
and Miss Monica and Mr. Fred
stronger,
and Mr. Jürgen, we're completely out of time. I'll be getting back with you wonderful people very soon. Thank you. God bless you. You have been a blessing to the people of the world. to get the truth out. You're doing God's work by getting the truth out. It's the devil who tells a lie. The devil's people tell lies. You people are telling the truth, and God bless you, and happy Easter. Good night, everybody. Good night, Fred and Jurgen and Monica and Jay and Cameron and Lee. Thank you, and dear people, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be here same time, same place. Next week, we'll be having part two of the United States Ship Liberty. Good night, everybody.